demonstrated a steely will. That, too, was a trait that ran true in their line, and it had allowed them to not only survive, but also thrive under silence. As a family, an intense capacity for loyalty was their greatest strength. "None of my security systems have been set off any time during the past year," she told her grandmother. "I restocked the cupboard with 6 new jars of nutrient mix 6 months ago." They were designed to hold their food value for a number of years. "It took me much longer than usual to finish the first jar because I inadvertently bought several packets of nutrition bars with a short use-by date that I had to eat first." "Who has been in your apartment in that period?" Silver held her grandmother's eyes, knowing her words would be an anvil smashing into everything Ina Merkant had fought to build. "Family," she said quietly. "The only people who have been in my apartment over the past 6 months are members of the family." Usually, that would have meant well under 10 people overall. Likely her cousin Yvonne, who worked in building security, her brother, and possibly another merchant or two passing through Moscow who needed to touch base for reasons of family or business, or who'd asked to stay in her spare bedroom while in the city. However, approximately 5 months earlier, Silver had hosted a large meeting that focused on Caleb's acceptance into the Merkant family, not as an outsider they trusted, but as one of them. He hadn't been at the meeting about him. The discussion had been robust, but in the end, they'd come to a unanimous decision. Silver had always known it would go that way. Ina had already decided, and her grandmother was the one who set the course of the Merkant family. She'd also known Ina would listen carefully to all the pros and cons, on the slim chance that she'd missed weighing an important factor. "During the meeting," Silver continued, "I kept no track of the family's movements in my apartment." She hadn't thought she needed to be vigilant. These were merchants. Their family maxim was cor meum familia est, my heart is family. The emotional maxim came from a time long before silence, but they'd left it unchanged, because silence or not, it spoke to what tied their family together, what kept them strong even as others faltered and fell. Her grandmother's fingers curved over her wrist. "I've already locked down your security and will personally look into every member of the family who has been in your apartment in the past 6 months. I'll also review all movements in the corridor outside your apartment in the operative window. Whatever it takes, I'll find out who tried to kill my granddaughter." "Grandmother." Silver sat up, her head having cleared in the interim. "This is my—" "No, Silver. This is a family problem." Her grandmother's eyes pinned her in place. "You may assist. I will share the data with you. But the most pressing matter is to get you into a secure living space where no one will question why you can't have familial visitors." Silver considered her options. Because her grandmother was right. If she began turning away those who were merchants, it would create fine fractures in the structure of the family. That result might even be the poisoner's intent. Silver needed to take herself out of circulation while the traitor was brought to ground. A single bad seed could not be permitted to poison an entire family. "I could relocate to the outskirts of Moscow," she suggested. "Family members are far less likely to pass through that region."
"Since there are no secure apartment buildings that far out, you'll have to either hire a full complement of security or leave yourself open."
That, too, was true. As was another fact. Ina Merkant was too smart not to have used the time Silver had been unconscious to come up with a solution.
Oh.
All at once, she knew why Valentian was outside her room. Ina wouldn't have permitted him that close unless she needed him there.
"Stonewater."
She stared at her normally very sensible and rational grandmother.
"Impossible."
Chapter 4.
"Glass is broken, 132. Chairs broken, 12. Jukeboxes turned upside down because some bear thought it was hilarious, 1. Bill to follow." No charge for the spilled alcohol. Your bears were very careful not to do that. That bill's going to Selenka.
Email to Alpha Nikolaev from Nina Rodchenko, manager of Club Moscow.
Why? Ina asked. It's an easy sell. We tell everyone you're spending time with the bears to gain a better insight into how changelings view the world so you can more efficiently run MNET.
It was a brilliant idea. Could well strengthen MNET's credibility in the eyes of those who believed Asai shouldn't be at the helm of what was effectively a humanitarian organization. But,
Grandmother, you're unaware of the differences between the various changeling groups. Explain.
Living with leopards might be an option,
Silver said.
They're independent and tend to make homes far from one another while remaining a tightly knit unit, similar to the predatory bird clans like the eagles, and all akin to our family.
She paused to put her thoughts in order.
From everything I know, bears are like wolves, but worse.
In what way?
Wolves create large dens where they live in family or couple units, and while they have single individual residences, each person is still part of a bigger whole. To find true privacy, you'd have to leave the den and go out some distance into the wilderness.
Because apparently wolves like to follow packmates and make sure said packmates were okay. That was what she'd once heard from Selenka when the wolf alpha made a rare visit to Caleb's Moscow office. Silver couldn't recall what had led to this particular conversation, but the Black Edge alpha had laughingly told her that though she was alpha, her packmates had come looking for her a few days earlier when she'd taken off for a hard run and not returned for a day.
Bears, she said to her grandmother, are worse by a factor of multiples.
Silver had little personal experience with them, aside from Valentian's visits and the odd meeting with Stonewater's second-in-command, Anastasia, but she knew how to listen, and she lived in a region with a strong Ursine presence. She'd heard more than enough over the years to build up what she believed was a fairly accurate picture.
They live right on top of one another and have no concept of what it means to be a loner.
That makes little sense. Natural bears are not community-minded.
Unfortunately, it appears the human instinct to be social has been supercharged in changeling bear genetics. I'll have an aneurysm with that much togetherness.
Her grandmother didn't reply for some time, her thought processes as opaque as always.
If they're that close, she said at last, no stranger would ever get to you. According to the research I did while waiting for you to wake, bears also have an incomparable sense of smell, so you'd be in no danger from poisons.
Searching for anything to get her out of this, Silver said,
do you know how many Moscow bars have a bear surcharge? All of them.
Silver knew that because she knew her city.
Something always seems to get broken when a group of bears is out to have a good time.
Yet they aren't banned.
For some inexplicable reason, people like bears, even if they break things.
As with Silver and Valentian, the bar owners kept opening their doors to the rowdiest possible guests.
Good, Ina said.
Good?
To be so welcome, regardless of their propensity for disorderly behavior, they must be generally good-natured. However, their reputation means no one will possibly imagine that you'd want to live with the bears for any reason but political expediency.
Ina held up a hand when Silver would have interrupted.
The poisoner, after all, has no way of predicting exactly when you'll open one of the contaminated jars, so he or she won't assume you're leaving your apartment in response to a security breach.
Silver continued to stare at her grandmother.
You couldn't live in such surroundings.
No.
Ina rose to her feet, her tunic and wide-legged pants a pale shade of green, the ornate ruby pendant she wore on a long silver chain, an heirloom passed down from one leader of the family to the next. Depending on the individual wearing it, the pendant sometimes became a watch chain or a brooch. Other times it was carried in a pocket rather than worn. Silver had seen it around her grandmother's neck all her life.
But, Ina added, you're young enough to adapt. You must. The world is changing, and Merkins have survived so many centuries, so many empires, because we adapt without losing the core of who we are.
Silver was having difficulty processing what her grandmother was saying.
Are you telling me to breach silence?
She knew Ina believed silence gave them strength when the world around them was falling prey to emotion. But for a single exception, those who could think with crystal-clear pragmatism would always win over the emotionally led. But that wasn't the deciding factor when it came to Silver. Discarding silence wasn't a choice for her, would never be a choice, not if she wished to stay sane, stay alive.
You know I can't.
There was a reason her sub-designation had been considered extinct pre-silence.
Of course I know.
Her grandmother's response was a rebuke.
What I'm telling you is that you need to learn to function at peak efficiency in a changed world. Silence has fallen. Psi and changelings and humans are beginning to intermingle, mate, produce offspring. Our family must not be left behind.
Steely gray eyes held Silver's, the power in them a pulse against her skin.
You must understand this new world better than anyone else in the family. You will lead after I'm gone.
Silver did not ever think of her grandmother's mortality. Ina was too strong, too much a force of nature.
You're only 83 years of age.
Those of her grandmother's generation were forecast to live to 120 at least.
Life is a volatile process, Silver. When you were born, I could have never predicted that today we'd be living in a world where the most brutally powerful cardinal in the net would be openly in love with a woman whose closest friends are emotion-drenched empaths.
Ina's gaze was distant, seeing a past that had once been her present.
Designation E was outlawed then, empaths considered useless. Yet now it is the E's who hold the Psi-Net together. Without them, we'd all eventually fall prey to ravening madness. Even the most gifted foreseers did not see this coming.
Silver had nothing to say to that. Her grandmother was right. Change was a juggernaut crashing through the world. It could not be stopped, could not be turned back. Not that Silver would make the latter choice, even were it possible. Silence was necessary for her, but for others it was a cage. Empaths, brutalized by having their natural abilities crushed and belittled, were simply the most obvious casualties. That wasn't even the worst of it. It was open knowledge now that the century of silence had done catastrophic damage to the fabric of the Psi-Net. All Psi needed the biofeedback provided by their connection to a psychic network. Cut that link, and an excruciating death would follow in a matter of minutes. Silence had poisoned that critical network, fostering pockets of seething darkness formed of all the emotions the Psi refused to feel. That darkness had turned into a malignant rot that caused the ravening madness of which her grandmother had spoken. It was the E-Psi, with their ability to handle even the worst emotions, who had created the honeycomb, a golden shield against the rot. But even the E's couldn't fix everything. Because what wasn't common knowledge was that in constructing a cold world where Psi didn't mate with or love or marry humans, Silver's race had unknowingly removed a vital element from the Psi-Net. The psychic network that was the lifeblood of millions of Psi was in the midst of a slow but catastrophic collapse. Unless Psi could once more win human hearts, bringing their unique energy back into the Psi-Net, the destruction of the Psi race was inevitable. So yes, Silver agreed that the fall of silence was a good thing. Still.
Bears?
She looked out the window to where she knew Valintian waited.
There's a distinct chance I will go insane with no help from the Psi-Net malignants required.
Her grandmother stood.
You are a merchant. You can handle a clan of bears.
Of course she could. That wasn't the point.
What did he ask of you in return for safe harbor for me?
Nothing but that we will never harm the clan or help anyone else do so, nor will we ever share anything we learn about Stonewater. I have given my word that the Merkins will honor that request.
Rarely given, Ina's word was as durable as a diamond without flaw.
So was Silver's.
Merkins might not believe in loyalty to anyone beyond the family unit, but contrary to the popular perception of their family as cold-blooded and mercenary, they also did not betray those who'd assisted them in such ways. Honor still meant something to Silver's blood.
That's all.
It appears this particular bear is not cutthroat.
Ina paused.
That could be a problem.
Silver knew this was her out. She could convince her grandmother that Valentian was too soft-hearted to provide any real protection against an external threat. But that would be a lie. Silver did not lie to her grandmother.
Stonewater bears have a reputation for not starting the brawls they're involved in.
The latter was part of why the clubs kept letting them back in.
However, once the fight is on, they will not back down. They're also fiercely territorial and overprotective of those they consider under their care. Should I accept Stonewater's offer of safe harbor, Valentian would tear off the head of anyone who threatened me.
Excellent.
Ina turned toward the door.
Get dressed. You'll be weak, an unfortunate side effect that can't be ameliorated by anything except time. But I want you safe before someone not bound by confidentiality realizes what's happening.
A pause.
Trust no one, Silver. Especially not any member of our family.
After her grandmother left the room, having first pulled the privacy curtain around Silver's bed, Silver got up with care. Her muscles felt like jelly, her entire body aching, but she could stand as long as she was careful about it. Upright, she reached for the items folded neatly on the bedside table. They were the clothes she recalled putting on that morning, all except for her panties. Those were still on her body. But since her bra was missing, she thought the medical staff must have had to cut through it to get to her chest. The bruising around her chest area when she opened the hospital gown seemed to bear that out.
Grandmother, why am I bruised on my upper half?
She asked telepathically as she took off the gown.
Your heart didn't stop, but the doctors were afraid it might, so they prepped for resuscitation. They say the bruising appeared 15 minutes after they pumped your stomach, a side effect of the poison.
Silver didn't know of any poison that would do this, but toxins weren't her field of expertise.
I'll need the medical files.
They're already waiting for you in your secure Cynet vault.
Thank you.
Silver finished buttoning up her white shirt, reached for the cloud gray of her skirt. As she pulled it on over her hips, she consciously regulated her breathing to keep herself from passing out. If half a glass had put her close to cardiac arrest, then a full glass would have ended her life. Had Valentin not interrupted her breakfast, he would have broken down her door to find a dead woman. She paused. Why had she immediately thought that he'd break down the door? As if it were a given.
His sense of smell, no doubt, she told herself. He'd have scented the first signs of decomposition.
She didn't know if any such scent would be present so soon after death, but why else would she have thought he'd break down her door? A door that was built to withstand earthquake forces. Not a determined alpha bear, however. Silver had a healthy respect for the Ursine's sense of determination, and also their occasional lack of common sense. Wolves she could negotiate with. Selenka Durev thought like a predator, and so did Silver. They understood each other. Bears, however. Even after all this time, Silver did not understand bears. At least Caleb appeared to have the same issue. It had taken him twice as long to come to an understanding with Stonewater as it had with Blackedge. The bears weren't actually politically aggressive except in protecting their territory, but neither were they open to sensible negotiations. No, they'd refused to take Caleb seriously until he'd have a beer with them. Caleb had instead teleported in with a 10-foot-tall cask of beer and told them he'd be teleporting it into the nearest volcano unless someone sat down and discussed the territorial situation with him. According to her boss, it was only the threat of so much beer going to waste that had caused Zoya Vashenko, the former Alpha of Stonewater, to agree to a meeting. The negotiations, of course, had taken months. Because... bears. They might be the most illogical, most wild, and most impossible to understand changelings in the world. And she was about to go live with them. With Valentian, who called her Starlight and asked her out for ice cream when he wasn't attempting to aggravate her into an emotional reaction. Grandmother, I think I'd rather start wearing head-to-toe body armor and chemically testing my food.
Think of it as an opportunity, Silver. How many other Psi can say they've lived with bears?
The answer was none. No rebels, no defectors. No one had ever infiltrated a bear den after Silence came into being.
That's because most Psi would come out permanently discombobulated, she pointed out to her grandmother. Did you know the bear idea of courtship is to kidnap their mates off the streets?
Surely not.
Surely yes.
If the kidnapped mate happened to be a bear, it wasn't a major issue. Bears expected that type of behavior. For all Silver knew, they encouraged it. But the last time it happened in Moscow, the chosen mate had been a human whose parents had called enforcement and filed kidnapping charges. Valentin had turned up to personally explain that their daughter was being courted and in no danger whatsoever. He'd confirmed she was free to come home at any time. The parents had thought him mad. Until their daughter returned, glowing and happily mated to a bear who'd dressed up in a suit and tie for the occasion. He'd also permitted his mate to give him a haircut. Silver didn't think she'd ever seen a bear so neatly pressed and polished.
I wanted to make a good impression,
he'd said with a sheepish smile when interviewed by a local comm station.
I don't want my in-laws to be mad at me for our entire mating.
He'd had no need for concern. The last time the parents spoke to the media, having gained a local profile after the kidnapping, they'd gushed over how much their daughter's mate adored her and how the bears were just the loveliest people you could imagine. The bear ability to be forgiven for their actions appeared to be a mysterious law of nature, one to which Silver had no intention of falling prey.
If it gets to be too much, send an SOS. Her grandmother said, her tone solemn. I still trust some people without question. I'll get you out.
Having finished dressing, Silver looked for her shoes before realizing she was in no shape to balance on 4-inch heels.
I can survive bears, grandmother. I'm a merchant.
Family legend said they had once been the loyal knights of a king. Whether that was true or not, they were a family that had never lost sight of itself, no matter who flexed their muscles in the Psi net. A clan of bears wouldn't defeat her. Neither would their alpha. Chapter 5 Mate, family, clan. That is our heart's heart.
Loyalty.
Honor. Courage. Stonewater. Words carved into the ceiling of the entrance to Denholm. Silver was a fucking queen, Valentin thought when she opened the door of her hospital room and stepped out. Not a princess, dewy-eyed and soft. A queen, regal, and with a way of looking down her nose at him that said he was a lowly peasant. He felt like one, too, though he wasn't only taller and bigger than her. He was wearing heavy work boots while she was barefoot. Her feet were narrow and pale, her toenails polished and squared, as polished and precise as she was. A neatly tailored suit jacket lay over the white shirt she'd tucked into her skirt. Notwithstanding the fact she'd almost died mere hours earlier, she now had her hair back in its usual neat coil, and damn, but he'd go down on his knees and beg if she'd promised to let it down for him. Then he'd tumble her into his lap and...
Focus, Valentin.
Aside from her bare feet and the paleness of her skin, Silver could have been about to step into a work meeting. Except his starlight would never go anywhere in clothes that were wrinkled, and these bore inevitable marks from the medic's hasty removal.
"You'll need more clothes,"
he said, trying to figure out how to get her to agree to his exit strategy. No one else was going to see Silver Merchant with bare feet, that much he knew.
"I'll ask my grandmother to arrange it."
She glanced down the hallway, the elegant line of her throat making him want to nuzzle her, draw in the ice and fire of her scent straight from the source.
"When did she leave?"
"A couple of minutes ago. Said she had plans to put in motion."
Telling his bear to settle down until they had Silver in Stonewater territory, he scratched his jaw, only then realizing he'd forgotten to shave. If... when... he courted Silver into a kiss, he'd have to see if his stubble was too rough for her skin.
"You have anything but suits in your closet?"
"No, I sleep this way and work up perfectly pressed."
Grinning at the cool comment that made him want to kiss her until she melted, he put his hands on his hips.
"Tell your babushka to pack jeans or other tough pants, t-shirts, sweaters, stuff suitable for a little, rough and tumble."
"I don't intend to rough and tumble with anyone."
Those extraordinary eyes, so clear and frosty, pinned him to the spot. A lesser man, or one who had some sense in his head, might have flinched. Good thing Valentin was big enough to take her, and stupid enough to keep banging his head against a wall of silver silence.
"No choice in a clan,"
he said with a shrug.
"Bears are handsy."
They hugged like it was going out of business and threw each other around for fun.
"Adults will respect your personal space, but I can't promise the same for the littlest cubs. Your suits won't survive."
"Noted."
Silver tugged her shirt cuffs into perfect alignment.
"You need to find me some shoes."
"Yes, definitely a queen."
"Any particular kind?"
"Low heels that won't clash with this suit."
"I have a better idea."
He'd already sweet-talked a wheelchair from a changeling pony nurse. Now he pointed at it.
"Sit. We'll hide your legs under the blanket from your bed, and you can wear this hoodie to hide your hair and face."
Picking up the hoodie from the chair where he'd placed it after buying it from the hospital gift shop while Ina was with Silver, he prepared to argue with her over his plan. She never accepted anything at face value. She always had to question it down to the bone. It was as if she'd been born an obstinate bear and was only faking being Sai. But today she just said,
"A good solution,"
and sat in the wheelchair.
"We need to get some food into you."
He held out a bottle of nutrient drink he'd found in the vending machine at the gift shop. Maybe it was the Sai idea of a get-well-soon present. Not taking it, Silver said,
"My stomach and throat are raw."
Valentin didn't give up. He knew how to get under her skin.
"Want to be weak instead?"
A dangerously calm look before she held out her hand. Unscrewing the lid, he gave her the bottle, waited until she was done. After throwing the empty bottle in the nearest recycler, he handed her the hoodie, then ducked inside her room while keeping an eye on her and tore the blanket off her bed. The sight of her moving slowly as she worked her way into the dark blue of the hoodie, it did all kinds of things to him. It was odd to wear something Valentin had bought for her. She'd offer to reimburse him, except she knew he'd take that as an insult. As she'd told her grandmother, bears were intensely protective of their people. The more dominant the bear, the more overwhelming the protective urge. She wasn't one of Valentian's people, of course, but she'd fallen under his protection the instant she accepted the offer to stay with Stonewater. He'd fight to keep her safe, his big body merciless against any enemy who dared come at her. That body had to burn a significant amount of energy. She wondered what he ate to retain his strength. That last thought had her freezing in the act of pulling on a garment she would never normally wear. She was reacting to him. Again.
Silver did not react emotionally to anyone, her silence pristine in the subtle mercant way that worked with each individual mind rather than being a blunt hammer. She hadn't reacted to Valentin the first time he'd come to her apartment, or even the second or the third. She'd been impressed by him in an intellectual way, had found crossing words with him an interesting exercise. So yes, perhaps there had been a reaction there. It was unheard of for her to allow anyone to interrupt her, not just at home, but also at the office, again and again. But that reaction had been muted, tightly in control. This wasn't. And it hadn't been for at least 6.5 months. The math wasn't hard to do. The honeycomb had come fully into being only weeks before her responses began to change. That the empathic construct would bleed emotion was no surprise. The once starkly black-and-white landscape of the psi net was now overlaid with a fine golden net that was as powerful as it was delicate, and the sparks of color created by the minds of the e-psi could be found far and wide. Like all psi who preferred to stay sane, Silver was linked to the honeycomb, the connection made via an e-psi she trusted without reservation. Regardless of that, no empathic sparks should have infiltrated her shields, not when those shields had been modeled on the martial shields of the deadliest men and women in the Psi-net. And yet, Silver was reacting to Valentin Nikolaev in a way that defied silence. Walking out of the recovery room just as Silver had gotten herself into the hoodie, Valentin waited for her to get into the wheelchair, then he put the blanket over her legs. While she settled the blanket as she wanted it, he reached over to zip up the hoodie and pull forward the hood to shadow her face. He pretended not to see the look she shot him, the one that said he was crossing boundaries. Being innocently oblivious to silent reprimands was a skill he'd cultivated as a curious bear cub with 3 older sisters whose stuff he'd like to nose about in. Not because he wanted it, just because it was there.
Suits you.
It swallows me, was the cool response.
That too.
Mentally plotting how he could swap out the gift store hoodie for one of his own once they reached Denholm, he began to push the wheelchair manually rather than using the hover capability. Silver was inches from him, and she was about to enter his lair. As far as the bear priorities in life went, he was pretty much set. Of course, he thought with an inward snarl that was more mangy wolf than extremely civilized bear. The only reason she was coming to Denholm was because someone had tried to poison her. Grandmother Merkant had been explicit in saying that his job was to protect, hers to unearth the traitor within the family. That was her right as Alpha of the Merkants, but he'd make it clear to her that should she need someone to rip off a head or two, Valentin would be delighted to take care of that pesky problem for her. No one was allowed to hurt one of Valentin's people and get away with it.
You're rumbling. It sounds like muted thunder.
Valentin's hands tightened on the handles of the wheelchair.
Hazard of being a bear. We aren't good at not showing our med.
A passing physician gave him a wide berth at that instant.
No one will hurt you again,
he told Silver as they exited into the parking lot.
I'll make certain of that.
It was an Alpha's promise. Silver's back stiffened.
I'm not yours to protect.
Valentin stopped by the powerful 4-wheel drive vehicle he'd had a clanmate in the city pick up from near Silver's home and drive to the hospital lot. Going around to face Silver, his hands on the arms of the chair, he said,
As long as you're in Denholm, you're one of mine, Starlight.
What he didn't say was that he intended to charm her into making the move permanent. Cats did the suave, overconfident thing. Bears knew taking a woman for granted just led to a fall right on your smug face. In this, he'd take the bear approach. Charm first, be smug later. First, however, he scooped her up and put her in the passenger seat before she could even think about stepping onto the asphalt in her bare feet. The Human Alpha. Bowen Knight, security chief of the Human Alliance and its effective leader, looked at the latest update on his screen with grim focus.
Alliance medical investigators and Ashaya Elaine, Psy rebel and brilliant scientist, continued to agree. The chip in his brain, the one that blocked Psy from violating his thoughts, was continuing to degrade. The rate of decay had slowed from initial predictions, but it was going inexorably in one direction. He'd been the first chipped, would be the first to fall if they didn't find a solution. He'd come to terms with that when Ashaya Elaine first made the devastating diagnosis. But now that all of the chipped were past the safe removal zone, including his sister, Lily, he found his anger spiking into red-hot frustration.
"I'm not sorry for the choice I made."
Lily had said that to him when he'd asked her to consider getting her chip out while extraction was still possible. He'd known what her answer would be before he ever asked the question, but he'd had to ask, had to try to protect the woman who'd been his small, big-eyed shadow in childhood. Switching off the screen, he was about to return to work when there was a knock on his door. As the rest of his team were coming in late after a long night when they'd all pulled punishing hours, he should have been the only one in the building. He palmed a weapon before saying,
"Come in."
He wasn't expecting the man who walked through the door. Raising an eyebrow, he said,
"Polite of you not to teleport right into my office. Sahara is attempting to teach me manners."
Caleb Krychek slipped into a seat on the opposite side of Beau's desk. Not about to be fooled by the Cardinal's casual attitude, Beau leaned back in his own chair.
"Why is a member of the ruling coalition in my office?"
The Alliance didn't have any kind of relationship with the new rulers of the Psi race. The coalition's predecessors had been murderous evil, while this new group included an empath and an arrow, both of whom had saved countless lives, Psi, changeling, and human. Krychek had done the same. That was why Beau was listening to him. Because the ruling coalition also featured Nikita Duncan and Anthony Kiriakis, who, like Krychek, had been part of the defunct and vicious Psi Council. Word from those who'd know, and who Beau trusted, was that Anthony had always been a rebel in the shadows, while Krychek was the one who'd brought the Council crashing down. There were rumors he was directly behind the disappearance of at least one counselor, a cold-blooded sociopath of a woman Beau suspected of having used mind control to turn the former leadership of the Alliance into her puppets. All of that might have made him more receptive to the Coalition, but for one brutal fact. Nikita Duncan may have survived the purging of the Council, may even have given birth to a cardinal empath Beau respected, but that didn't wipe her hands clean of all the blood she'd spilled, a lot of it human.
"Humans and Psi,"
Krychek said now,
"are on an inevitable collision course."
Beau's shoulders nodded.
"This have anything to do with the fact your people need human minds for some reason?"
His direct access to Psynet data was erratic, dependent on a Psi junkie who was a brilliant hacker when he wasn't high. This time around, the other man had managed to get his hands on part of a secure document that talked about the necessary human element and how to achieve integration. Caleb betrayed no surprise at his knowledge.
"What I'm about to tell you is highly classified. I'm sharing the data because in this, Psi and humans may be able to assist one another. I doubt that, but I'm listening. The Psynet was never meant to hold only Psi minds,"
Krychek said.
"Until silence, humans were part of it through their relationships with Psi."
"How? We're not telepathic."
"Love forms a psychic bond. Changelings call it the mating bond."
White stars on black. Krychek's gaze was inscrutable.
"A human mind in the Psynet is connected only to the person with whom they share the mating bond. No one else can even reach that mind, much less hack it."
Beau felt his lips twist, but he held back his cynical comment about how humans outside the Psynet weren't afforded that courtesy.
"You're forgetting an entire race,"
he said instead.
"Didn't the Psi want changelings in their network?"
"Changelings did have a presence, but their numbers were far lower. Likely because in many cases, changelings are able to provide Psi mates with an alternative psychic network we don't fully understand, thus taking Psi out rather than bringing changelings in.
Humans, however, were always an integral aspect of the Psi-Net. Not peripheral. Essential.
Beau stared at Krycek, the laugh that erupted from his throat unintentional.
Let me get this straight. The high and mighty Psi need humans to maintain your psychic network?
Yes.
Krycek's expression continued to be impassive.
Coercion negates the effect. The Psi-human bond must be made by choice.
You're shit out of luck, then,
Beau said, all laughter gone from his soul.
For humans to trust a Psi is to consign themselves to psychic rape.
His tone was hard, his heart even harder.
Should the Alliance work with the Coalition in encouraging and creating opportunities for human-Psi relationships,
Krycek said,
the Coalition will put all of its considerable resources into finding a way for humans to permanently block Psi intrusion.
Beau's hand tightened around the weapon he still held.
Of all the things they could have offered.
I already have access to the most brilliant scientists on the planet.
Ashaya and Amara Elaine are undoubtedly that, but they can't think of everything. The Coalition is offering you the entire machinery of the Psi race geared toward one overriding goal.
That machinery was massive, far beyond anything the Alliance could command.
All I'd have to do to get this generous gift is sell out my people, tell them to trust the Psi.
Beau shook his head.
The answer is no.
He would not betray everything the Alliance stood for on the faith of a nebulous promise from a race that had done so much damage.
Every human on this planet,
he said, rage a cauldron of darkness inside him,
knows at least one person who's had their mind treated like a store or a playhouse by Psi who wanted to steal their ideas or just to defile. We have no reason or desire to help you.
Strange as it may seem, I agree with you. The Psi have no right to make this request.
Krycek rose to his feet as if to leave, paused suddenly.
My mate,
he said,
tells me I need to trust you with a fact we don't often share. Psi need the biofeedback offered by a psychic network. Sever that link and death comes in a matter of minutes. Should the Psi-Net fail,
he added softly,
it'll mean the near extinction of an entire race.
Beau's hand fisted on his desk, the image a devastating one. Because the Psi weren't only the Coalition and powerful bastards like Krycek. The Psi were also the little girl down the road who waved shyly to him from her nursery window, the M-Psi who saved lives day after day, and the vulnerable, open-hearted empaths who were helping humans and changelings as well as Psi. To imagine their lives snuffed out, it was a brutal vision. As brutal were the other images he had in his brain, of broken humans who'd had their entire lives stripped from them by Psi, of children who'd lost their mothers and fathers to Psi death squads, of men and women who'd committed suicide after losing their life's work to a Psi thief.
Do it for nothing in return,
Beau said quietly.
Do the research just because it's the right thing to do. Put humans and Psi on equal footing when it comes to psychic privacy. Then maybe we can talk.
Chapter 6.
I've just been alerted to a serious issue to do with pure telepaths.
Caleb Krycek to the rest of the ruling coalition. February 2082. Exhaustion began to bite at Silver 45 minutes into the drive to Stonewater territory. Regardless of how hard she tried to fight it, the fatigue seeped into her blood, made her head want to tilt to the side.
Maya Solnishka, you ever consider saying to hell with it, to the silence?
Valintian's unexpected question was a welcome dose of cold water. Ignoring that he'd addressed her as his sunshine, she focused on his question.
I don't see how that is any of your business.
No one could ever know that Silver couldn't breach silence. The world had to believe it was a choice. As far as the Merkins as a group went, the issue of silence was still under discussion, The overriding consensus was that surrendering to emotion would erode them, make them far too approachable, far too human in the wider sense. That didn't mean a merchant would never break silence. One member of her family hadn't ever been truly silent.
Of course it isn't my business.
Valentian's deep rumble of a voice broke into her thoughts, though she'd never forgotten his presence. Silver wasn't in the habit of forgetting 6 feet plus several inches of heavily muscled threat next to her.
But just because it isn't my business,
Valentian continued, sounding aggrieved,
doesn't mean I'm not interested.
Bears did appear to have a tendency toward inveterate curiosity. Half the time when they got into trouble, it was because they'd been poking their noses where they didn't belong. A group had even wandered all the way into Caleb's isolated home soon after Caleb bonded with Sahara. When caught and questioned, they'd belligerently said they didn't believe the rumors of Caleb having a mate, had come to see for themselves.
Why do bears like knowing things so much?
A narrow-eyed look.
Probably the same reason you do, Miss Silver Spy.
Silver doubted it. From all she knew, bears were inquisitive down to the bone. For her, knowledge was power. And she didn't have anywhere near the depth of knowledge she wanted on the bears. That placed her in a quandary. Valentian put on an act of not being particularly subtle or intelligent, but only half of that was true. It was about as subtle as a baseball bat to the head, but he was ferociously intelligent. All alphas were. Strength alone might be accepted in a changeling soldier, but never in a high-ranking member of a pack or clan. It was a lesson many Psi still hadn't learned. As a result, she knew Valentian wouldn't give her any information unless it was an equal trade.
Silence suits me, she said in answer to the question he'd asked. The calm orderliness it gives to my mind makes me very efficient.
Not a lie.
You remember what it was like before you were silent?
As she'd thought, he was clever. He'd picked up the secondary layer of meaning in her response.
My answers aren't free.
A laugh that built in his chest filled the vehicle.
Ask what you want, Starlichka,
he said.
But first you answer my question.
Again, he proved his acute intelligence. He knew Silver would avoid answering the question if she could. It wasn't as if she'd given her word.
Yes, she said. Conditioning begins during childhood, but it doesn't take for several years.
It had never been difficult for Silver to talk about silence because she'd never been conditioned with dissonance, a pain loop designed, among other things, to stifle dissemination of information about the protocol.
What were you like as a kid? A feral beastie?
Feral beastie?
Silver stared at him as she repeated the English words he'd slipped into a conversation otherwise undertaken in Russian. A shrug.
My great-grandfather was Scottish. He used to call me that. He liked me a lot.
Silver realized that in bear terms, feral beastie was probably an endearment.
My telepathic powers are significant. I'm classified at 9.3 on the gradient.
Goes to 10?
9.9. Cardinals are off the scale.
You must be able to speak telepathically across the country.
Further.
Officially, Silver was what was termed a pure telepath, her skill to do with communicating over vast distances. It wasn't so simple, of course, and pure telepaths could be taught to use their abilities in all kinds of ways, including how to use their minds to break those of others. However, thanks to merchant muscle, the Psi Council hadn't got their hands on Silver. She'd never been groomed to be a torturer. In truth, though telepathy was her primary ability, Silver wasn't only a pure telepath. But as her secondary ability was a useless one that had saddled her with a vulnerability without an advantage to balance it out, she never factored it into her psychic skill set.
As a cub,
Valentian's bass timbre.
You must have had a chaos of voices coming at you.
My family protected me while I was an infant, but they eventually had to teach me how to shield myself, and part of doing that meant lowering their shields and allowing me to feel what awaited if I didn't learn to protect myself. The crashing wave of sound had literally put her flat on the floor, the roar of it a horror that threatened to crush her brain. Valentian's eyes were a primal amber when he glanced at her.
How young were you?
It doesn't matter, she said, intrigued at this glimpse of the bear that lived inside him. It had to be done. She'd had to understand the danger on a visceral level so she'd know why she had to practice so hard with her shields and with her silence. Valentian went as if to reach out, touch her in that tactile changeling way of interacting, wrenched his hand back partway.
I don't understand why you had to lose your emotions to gain psychic control.
The coming generation of children will test whether emotions can coexist alongside control. Silver would do everything in her power to assist those innocent young minds. Going backwards isn't an option for me.
Why?
Silver took a leaf from Valentian's own book.
Because I say so.
A deep rumbling sound from his chest that sounded very much like the bearish version of a growl.
That wasn't very nice.
Silver wasn't about to get into an argument with a bear, especially over something so nonsensical. Unlike Caleb, she didn't have a keg of beer and a volcano handy with which to call a ceasefire.
How did you become Alpha?
The grumbling rumble was still in his voice when he answered.
You're asking a very big question.
So did you.
If he was trying to intimidate her with his rumbling, he'd have to try a lot harder.
We had a deal. Answer the question.
I killed all the other challengers.
She blinked, stared at him, and realized something.
You're lying.
A totally unrepentant grin.
You made me mad.
Another wave of exhaustion slammed into her. Her head spun. But Silver wasn't about to enter an unknown situation asleep and vulnerable.
Keep talking, she ordered.
When Valentian didn't dispute her right to give that order, Silver knew she must look in bad shape indeed.
I became Alpha because that's who I am.
A shrug, broad shoulders rippling with a strength that would outmatch any other man in the city, likely in the country.
I always knew I was born to care for a clan. Since I didn't fuck up and turn into an asshole in the interim, the clan accepted me when Zoya decided it was time for her to step down.
Silver caught a hidden undertone in his statement, was certain he wasn't telling her the whole truth.
If she'd evidenced a desire to remain in her position, you'd have challenged her.
I respect her too much for that. I'd have left to found my own clan.
Shadows fell on the car from the heavy tree canopy above them, old trees with thick trunks lining both sides of the narrow road.
It's hard for two adult alphas who've both come into their power to share the same space.
That changes once one cedes power.
A nod.
It must be difficult,
Silver said quietly,
to cede power after a lifetime of leading.
You're thinking of Ina.
Since he'd clearly already intuited the merchant line of succession, she saw no harm in answering his question.
The idea of my grandmother handing over the reins is one I struggle to accept.
The heavily forested road turned into a dirt track in front of her.
I don't think she'd do it for just anyone. But for the granddaughter she's taught herself, I think when the time comes, Maya Solnishka, she'll be proud to take a back seat so you can shine.
The emotional interpretation gave her pause. The truth was that while Silver embraced her responsibility to be her grandmother's right hand, she wasn't sure she wanted Ina to cede power anytime soon. Her grandmother lived and breathed the merchant family.
See those trees?
Valentian raised one big hand to thrust back the messy tumble of his hair.
In a few weeks, they'll be blanketed by snow, until together they look like a dignified old church.
Silver went to follow his gaze, was distracted by something else highlighted by the beams of sunlight that speared through the canopy.
Are those children from your clan or wild bears?
They were too small to be adult changeling bears.
Is that bear hanging upside down from a tree limb? I didn't know that was anatomically possible.
The rumbling growl beginning again, Valentian brought the vehicle to a halt and stepped out.
Small bears, here, now!
It was a bass drum of sound that wasn't a yell, but that carried all the same. Five bear cubs melted out of the woods to stand around Valentian. Judging from their size and what little she knew of changeling bears in this form, she thought they couldn't be older than 7 at the most. At present, they were doing a very bad job of appearing meek while trying to sneak looks inside the vehicle. One lifted its paw in a wave at Silver. Valentian put his hands on his hips and said,
"Eyes here."
His tone as he gave that order was different from his initial one, and this time every single bear snapped to attention. Crouching down to their level, Valentian began to speak. She couldn't hear what he said, hadn't known he could speak that quietly. But the child bears all nodded after a short minute before turning and running into the trees. Valentian was chuckling when he got back into the vehicle.
Arkasha semi-shifted so he could hang upside down. Too damn clever.
What were they doing out here?
Being trouble. They think they're the tiny bear version of gangsters.
Laughter in his eyes.
They wait for unsuspecting clanmates to pass underneath and jump on them.
Wouldn't bigger bears scent the children?
The gangsters are just old enough to know how to use the wind shifts to their advantage.
He seemed proud rather than angry.
Do young Sai cause their caretakers this much grief?
No, not yet. Silence has certain advantages.
Valentian's hands clenched on the steering wheel as he got them underway again.
I was going to say maybe it does, but never having any of the young idiots play tricks, not watching them grow into their skins in freedom, seeing the idiots become slowly less idiotic until one day they're men and women I'd have at my back any day of the week.
He shook his head, his hair gleaming blue-black in the sunlight that came in through the sunroof.
I wouldn't give that up for anything.
Shifting to hover drive when the dirt track came to an abrupt end, he took them into the trees. Silver watched him maneuver and she thought of her cousin, Lilia. Currently 12, she was on the borderland between fully conditioned and just unconditioned enough that she could be nudged either way. Ina hadn't yet made the decision as to which way was better for Lilia. They had approximately 3 months before her silence training would have progressed too far to be turned back without causing her psychic and possibly physical distress. To simply stop, as some parents were choosing to do, against advice from the medics and psychologists working for the ruling coalition, wasn't an option either. At that age, a child's needs had to be carefully managed, or that child might be ruined for life when it came to their psychic and psychological health.
I grew into my skin in silence, she said aloud several minutes later. Are you implying that I didn't grow into an individual?
Starlichka.
A rebuking look.
You know I'd never say that.
He brought the vehicle to a stop about 50 meters from what looked like the mouth of a large cave. Several other vehicles were parked nearby, but there were nowhere near enough to account for a full clan. Not getting out, Valentian turned to brace his hand against the top of her seat.
But are you who you would have been without silence?
I would be mad without silence, Silver said into the quiet, her words stones thrown into a mirror-still pond. Imagine being able to hear tens of thousands of voices screaming at you, inside your head. Now imagine being emotional, and as a result of a surge of shock or anger or grief, losing control of your shields.
How many times do you think that could happen before your mind broke?
I don't believe it,
Valentin said with a scowl.
The silver merchant I know wouldn't break, no matter what the provocation. Trust me, I've tried.
Silver shook her head.
Prior to silence, she told him, a significant minority of pure telepaths chose to end their lives, most in a way that destroyed their brains. The top choice was to put a gun in the mouth and blow off the roof of the head.
That particular fragment of data was buried under thousands of others because pure telepaths weren't considered a problematic designation. Telekinetics, combat telepaths, foreseers, the rare and dangerous X-Psi, they were seen as unstable and in need of extra attention and training. But pure telepaths? Seldom any issues once they learned to manage their shields, at least until they hit about 60 years of age and blew their brains out.
And now?
Valentian's voice was gritty, his attention so intense that it felt like a furred brush against her senses. Silver tried to shrug off the irrational thought.
Silence changed the numbers, she said as her eyelids began to grow so heavy it was as if each lash were anchored by a tiny weight. Pure telepaths have the lowest rate of suicide of any designation in the entire Psi race.
The silence protocol had worked for the pure telepaths, a truth that tended to get forgotten. Silver had had to point it out to Caleb, who usually didn't miss anything. However, because she'd drawn Caleb's attention to it and he'd alerted his fellow members of the ruling council, the educational plans being developed for pure telepaths were different from those being developed for other designations. And her mind, it was rambling. She realized that the same instant she realized Valentian was at her side of the vehicle and that her door was open. He was lifting her into his arms a heartbeat later, his big body a furnace. She went to protest that she could walk, but her brain wasn't working right, and that was worse than the fact her body wasn't working right. This was not how she'd planned to enter the Stonewater Clan's den.
Chapter 7 I want to be alone, said no bear ever.
The Traveler's Guide to Changelings, Revised Edition, 1897. Valentian kept Silver's lax body tucked close to his as he entered Denholm. She'd lost consciousness a second after he took her into his arms, was now a warm but dead weight that had his heart drumming against his ribcage. He'd seen her fire dim in front of him, had felt her light flicker. Nova, who was waiting for him near the entrance passage that was the narrowest part of Denholm, kicked immediately into healer mode.
She hurt? No. Medics said this might happen during the early part of her recovery.
Despite the reminder, Valentian couldn't help it.
Check her anyway, all right?
Those other medics weren't his sister and Stonewater's chief healer, who he knew would never lie to him.
Already in the plan, Mishka.
His sister whipped out a small scanner from one of the capacious pockets of her full-skirted yellow dress, ran it over Silver's body as they walked. Valentian soon exited the passageway to hit the massive space that was the heart of Denholm, despite not being in the center. The cavern was designed to act as a staging post should a battle ever reach this far into clan lands. Their living quarters could be easily blocked off, non-combatants taken out through hidden back passages while the clan's dominance fought in this space. Bears could kill almost anything that came at them. All they needed was space to move. In times of peace, the cavern was the social heart of his people, so it wasn't surprising when clanmates flowed around Valentin and Nova, curious but not intrusive, the rambunctious little ones kept back by the adults. Valentin would return to hug the cubs after he'd settled Silver into her room. They needed the contact at that age, now even more than usual, with their strong pack badly wounded, ragged and broken and bleeding. Valentian's heart flinched as the knowledge that never left him roared to the forefront of his mind. At least the cubs, tiny gangsters included, would be fine until he could come hold them close. He'd spotted Stasia and his third-in-command, Peter, on the far side of the cavern. They were more than capable of spreading their arms wide and drenching the little ones in affection.
Being strong in a bear clan didn't only have to do with physical might.
In here,
his bossiest sister said right then.
Stasia and I put her in the room next to yours, since we all know you'd just move her if we didn't.
Nova managed to get in an eye roll.
Good thing Nika's away, or I'd have had to kick her out.
The room didn't have much more than a bed and private facilities. Nika had packed up and stored her personal items so the space could be used by other clanmates, but it hadn't looked that different even when his sister was living here. Changeling bears, even their least extroverted, didn't like being alone all that much. An introvert bear might choose to quietly read his book, but he'd do it in the cavern, surrounded by the hum of clan life. Wondering if Silver would choose to join them or stay in her quarters, Valintian placed her gently on the soft white sheets. Her face was incredibly pale, chill alabaster devoid of the glow that made her such a vivid force.
She's cool to the touch.
He went to grab a blanket to put over her.
Wait, Mishka,
Nova said.
I think her temperature may just be inside the healthy range for a sigh.
Sitting herself down on the bed, she took another reading, followed it up by manually checking Silver's pulse.
I talked with Tamsin at Dark River after you called me. Got a briefing on Psy physiology. Said I wanted to be prepared as we were hosting a Psy visitor. I have her on speed dial if I need more detailed information.
She tapped her ear, where she wore a high-tech device Valintian couldn't stand. He kept ripping it out of his ear each time Pavel, one of his senior people and a certified tech geek, talked him into it. Nova's microphone was a tiny circle attached to the off-the-shoulder collar of her yellow dress. She was also wearing heels. The outfit wasn't sensible in the least, but where fashion was concerned, Nova was never sensible.
Do I need to contact Krychek and get her back to the hospital?
No.
Nova rose, her glossy black hair perfectly coiffed and her lipstick a dark pink.
Your starlight is fine. Just needs to rest so her body can recover from the shock of the poison and the treatment.
Having already lifted a soft blanket in spring green from the foot of the bed, Valintian pulled it over Silver. When Nova frowned and shifted on her heel as if to loosen Silver's clothing, he shook his head.
She won't want to be touched for anything but medical reasons.
He wasn't sure she'd forgive him for carrying her from the car, but sometimes a bear had to do what a bear had to do. He'd charm her out of her mad.
Got it.
Nova made sure the blanket was comfortable around Silver, then the two of them stepped out of the room. The passageway directly outside was empty, probably thanks to one of Valintian's seconds. Else the clan would have congregated, asking for updates and offering to help, all the while trying to sneak a peek at Starlight. The tiny gangsters were probably holding court at this moment, giving equally tiny clanmates the lowdown. Not the adults, however. Valintian had told the misbehaving cubs he wouldn't bust them to their parents if they promised not to leave the safe area on their own again. They usually played their drop-and-attack game far closer to Denholm. It was their one get-out-of-jail-free card. After that, they'd be facing parental and clan punishment.
Why? Nova said. Does the frighteningly competent Silver Merchant need safe harbor badly enough to enter a den of disorderly bears? All you told me on the phone was that she'd ingested a complex poison and been successfully treated.
Someone tried to kill her.
He had to restrain the urge to open his throat and